Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
It's the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
Examine Starfleet's principles with a cold eye and ask ourselves if they're really applicable here.
Computer, hold turbo lift. Commander, if you have a specific suggestion, please feel free to make it.
Make a deal. An alliance.
With the Kazon?
With one of their factions. Or two. If we had the Ogla and the R'hllor as our allies, the others would be afraid to touch us.
Nothing we've been through with the Kazon would lead me to believe they're trustworthy. I can't imagine making a deal with them.
With all due respect, maybe that's because your imagination is limited by Starfleet protocols. As captain, you're responsible for making decisions in the best interest of your crew. And I think you have to ask yourself if you're doing that.
Hi!
Okay. Oh, man. Oh,
That ensign was a bad bosun, if you ask me.
One bad bosun.
That's a bosun's
bad
whistle.
Bosun.
That's a bosun's whistle. I thought he did not do a great job with the bosun's.
Might get dirty.
Bosun's whistle.
Might get dirty.
Dan, fuck
you. Might get dirty. You might get dirty. You might get dirty. You might get dirty.
Okay. All right. So, thank you, Dan.
You might get dirty.
So that's how the Maquis would do it,
I was wondering why Dan was staring at the clock so intently.
Please don't let me interrupt.
All right.
Wow, what was all that stuff that just happened?
That was a lot of
Neelix nonsense.
I think I blacked out. What happened?
Don't worry.
I blacked out.
It wasn't for too long. Hello.
Hi, I said that already.
No, you said hi.
I said, but that's the same as hello.
Did you say welcome to the It's Got Star Trek podcast?
Yeah.
Hello, my friends.
Okay, now, how about this? How about you? Now, you say, since you started the podcast.
You started it.
You say hi. You say the welcome part.
Hello!
No, you don't have to do that part. Hello, because we already did that. I'm just saying, just welcome people to the It's Got Star Trek podcast and then play the sound clip. Or do you want me to play the sound clip?
Welcome to the It's Got Star Trek podcast!
Yeah.
Hello, my friends!
I'm curious about
okay.
The voice you affected there. It was familiar. It was Alf.
A little bit.
Welcome!
Because you can do a full Alf.
To the It's Got Star Trek podcast!
Alfesque.
Yeah, that was Alf, an Alfesque, an Alfish.
Perhaps.
Alfish.
Long-time listeners will know that Dan can do a full-on Alf.
Perhaps.
You got any cat?
I can really only say like two things, though.
But that's
you can
pretty
say
good.
Willy.
You can say Willy, and you can say got any cat, right? Those are the main things, right?
That's all you really got to say when you're out.
I mean, I don't like to call
people catch on. Oh, he's doing Elf.
Yeah. That's all you have to do. I don't like calling out people to perform because I hate when people ask me to do it. But Dan, you have the option if you'd like to toss out.
You can save it for a different
a Willy or a got any cat.
I'll get right on it.
Or you could save it for later and just sort of toss it in there randomly.
Well, that's for me to worry about.
Oh, okay, so I'm unclear on the next step.
You can count on me.
All right, that's, again...
Count on me.
So wait, what do you want? What do you want?
Did you want to do any Alfisms?
Good idea, go ahead.
No, I'm not good at them. I can say, Willie, and I can say, got any cat?
Well, now it's built up too much.
But I don't do it as well as you. Nobody is suggesting that any of us can do it as well or better than Fusco himself.
Yeah, Fusco.
The man, the man who makes all the magic of Alf. Alf! I used to be able to do a pretty good Willy. Alf!
Hey, Willy!
Alf!
Hey, Willy!
Oh, Alf! I'm See, I can't. I don't quite have it anymore.
Do you got any cat?
We haven't had a cat since the first season.
Oh, because Alf ate it?
I don't know. It was a run.
I was lucky.
For, you know, a little while.
Mm-hmm. The cat was named Lucky.
All right. Dan really looked like he was about to play a sound effect then, but.
Well, were you going to ask me if I did Alf? Because I already did Alf.
Yeah, no. We're beyond that. Didn't we go beyond that?
Yeah. Well, I did Alf. I did two Alfs.
The okay. Elf.
All right.
Does that seem appropriate?
Which episode is this? I think this is episode 345.
Oh, you were thinking the number. I thought you couldn't remember Trek episode.
I couldn't remember.
Oh, I remember the
number we had.
Star Trek episode, but I think it's 345.
I don't fucking know, episode. Man.
You can tell me whatever.
I don't know, dude.
Talk about room tone. That's a pre-podcast discussion.
It might get dirty.
Don't worry about it. All right. This week, we're going to flip things around a bit because... No. Don't worry. It's not
flip
a big
it around.
Deal. Not a big deal. It's just that last week, we had a great podcast last week, but it took us forever to get to the discussion of the episode. So what we're going to do is...
Excuse me.
We're going to save some of the front matter. We've got some front matter. We're going to save that front matter.
Save it.
To later.
Later matter.
It's going to be middle matter.
Middle matter?
We'll do that at the beginning of the next section.
Which is more fun to say? Later matter or middle matter?
Middle matter.
Middle matter.
Middle matter.
Later matter's fun too.
Later matter's fun and it but and
I want everybody
I like an alliteration.
I demand that everybody listen. Mm-hmm. Write us and let us know. I don't usually ask the audience
what's
to write
the,
us.
But what's the email address? Where are they going to write
us? Oh my God.
Dan's demand.
Jesus Christ.
This is one of those Dan's demands.
Is this one of these times where I'm like saying something, but it's like in order to, like the prerequisite for me like saying a thing is somebody has to interrupt me and tell me what to say before I get a chance to say it?
It is not one of those things. It is perhaps a different thing that
I haven't even started. I haven't even started saying it yet. You have started telling me what to say.
Yeah, but you said people should write in, and I think temporally,
I will do it the way
best practice.
I will do it the
best
way
podcast.
I will do it
suggests.
The way that I will do it.
He said,
"It is my prerogative."
Dan, it is your prerogative, and we all know that.
I swear,
you are an iconoclast when it comes to the podcasting medium, and that is part of. That is the foundation, in fact, not just part, that is the foundation of our tremendous success.
Tremendous.
In the podcasting sphere. So, please continue. What was it you were saying something?
I was saying that everybody in the audience, and I never ask people to write us, that's always what Patrick does.
Agreed.
the distaste... in the back of your throat was sincere.
I'll put something. Never mind.
Don't think I didn't notice that. Do you think you're giving yourself credit because you stopped in the middle of an "I'll put something in the back of your throat" joke? You're like, since I didn't finish the "I'll put something in the back of your throat" joke,
you said it, not me.
No, because you. Okay, never mind. All right. Please.
So everyone's got to write and tell us which is more fun to say. Later matter or middle matter? And the way you do that is by writing to It's Got Star Trek at mail.com.
At Dan's demands.
Wait, right? It's a feedback.
No, actually, Dan was right. Please send all answers to Dan's questions to It's Got Star Trek at mail.com. Subject line, Dan's demands.
Dan's demands.
Feedback. At It's Got Star Trek no apostrophe .com. And you don't, it's not It's Got Star Trek no apostrophe. It's just It's Got Star Trek. When I said no apostrophe, I meant without the apostrophe.
There's no punctuation.
It's got Star Trek.com.
How can I consider it?
We've somehow already managed to undermine my whole matter to middle matter plan.
Yes.
So
middle matter?
Front matter.
Later matter.
Later matter. Or middle matter.
We're
going to get right into the
fiddle faddles. You ever had fiddle faddles?
Fiddle battle?
Yeah. Dan, Jesse.
Or now and later.
Screaming yellow zonger.
Dan, Jesse, listen. None of this. Especially Dan, you're shouting out unrelated treats.
I'm sorry, Chakotay.
And speaking of Chakotay, he is at times briefly saying some... interesting things in this episode, so we gotta talk about this episode. What episode is that? That episode is titled, it's a Voyager episode, and it is titled Alliances.
Peace
A massacre?
Maybe we should be thinking more like the Maquis.
I'm not suggesting I necessarily agree specifically with Chakotay. My comment on the Chakotay,
so that's how the Maquis would do it. Hmm?
Chakotay thing is I want to be fair because I'm not a huge lover of Chakotay.
Watch your tongue.
I'm not the biggest fan of the character.
Kind of whatever.
Often underutilized or misutilized or weirdly utilized. In this episode, I think, and I think this is true about a lot of aspects of this episode, all of a sudden you have kind of what the originally promised premise of Voyager squeezed all into here with like interesting philosophical dilemmas and like danger and damage and making hard decisions away from the Federation.
And they had like tactical like strategy, like political strategy. They were talking about like, well, supporting the Kazon could mess up the balance of power and give.
By the way, real quick,
I'm talking, something.
I know. I just
This is that couldn't wait.
No, it couldn't. This is good for you, Dan. It's good for you. It's good for me.
What are you charging me with?
We're getting excited. We can calm down a bit. Go for it, Dan. Take your time. I just want you to take your time, because we're rushing things because we're excited.
You've ruined what would have been the greatest step toward peace in decades.
So they want to play mini golf, eh? Two can play at that game.
Can you play that again, please? The delivery is perfect.
Which one? Both?
Play both of them.
Okay.
You've ruined what would have been the greatest step toward peace in decades.
They want to play mini golf, eh? Two can play at that game.
I don't know. There's something about both of those.
I know. Deliveries. I know. That it's crazy.
A lot of interesting Zach deliveries Brannigan in this episode.
Anyway, what I was saying was they had interesting like strategy and tactical stuff, like how like they were like, well, supporting the Kazon, it could mess up the balance of power and give one faction too much dominance, you know. And then Tuvok was all suggesting that it could also bring stability that would have a lasting effect once people experience it and decided they didn't know what they were missing,
like with the Klingon.
You know, like they brought up all these like interesting ideas that, you know, just. Like, they didn't just, like, go rote through the episode 8, blah, 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 blah. They brought up things for you to think about. What were you going to say when you interrupted me, by the way? Now I want to know what you were going to say.
What were you going to say?
Because, Patrick, you were like, by the way, or something like that.
No. I said what I intended to say, which is that we can slow down and chat. We were just, both you and I, in particular, Jesse's always good at not getting overexcited. I just noticed that you and I were talking extremely fast and... You know,
were you trying to censor me?
No, quite the opposite.
Such an egregious error.
I'm just making the point.
I wanted you to take the time to blossom.
We're in no rush.
Blossom. Do, 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 do. Don't know about the future. That's anybody's guess. Ain't no good reason for getting all distressed.
I mean, for example, I like that. I enjoy that. I'm not 100% clear on what it was, but I enjoyed
it. In my opinion,
the theme song to Blossom.
With my MB Alec.
Is that the theme song to Blossom?
Yeah, baby.
I didn't watch Blossom much. I caught it from here.
The sun is going to surely shine.
Yeah.
It was no Mr. Belvedere theme song.
No, Mr. Belvedere theme song was good. Although that theme song was originally made for a different show that only ran for one season, but they ended up not using that theme song.
What was
for
the
that
show supposed to be?
You've got to be kidding.
It's a show about some like rich old lady who moved in with some like cookie people or something. I can't remember.
Cookie people?
Cookie people.
Oh, these are cookie people. I was like, what the fuck?
That's racist.
Yeah, cookie people. Hey,
before I forget.
It's like Cookie Monster.
I meant to bring this up last week. Mm-hmm. This is somewhat unrelated to the episode. It's totally unrelated to the episode, but I forgot to bring this up last week and I meant to. There's a very important distinction I have to make about the meatloaf hamburger argument.
Oh, snap.
And sure. I have to remind everyone every once in a while because the argument gets mixed up. I'm not saying that meatloaf and hamburger are the same thing. Yeah. That is not what I'm saying. Yeah. I'm saying that if you like one, you necessarily like the other.
Huh.
Yes.
That's what I'm saying.
And that's an even bolder.
No, it's not. No, because okay, if
I appreciate you making the distinction. It's an important distinction.
It's not bolder, and I'll tell you why. Because if meatloaf and hamburger were the same thing, then yeah, of course you'd like them both because they're the same thing. Like, you can't like one thing that's the same thing as another thing and not like that other thing. So if they're the same, by logic, you like both of them if you like one. What I'm saying is that they might be slightly different, but you like them both or you don't like them both.
Well, okay.
And I'm insisting that's true. And if you disagree, you're just wrong.
Okay.
You just don't. Well, you're not thinking logically.
Well, no.
I'm glad you have such a charitable philosophy towards open and free debate. I do think at some point we probably should do a live YouTube discussion on this topic. With people participating
with video?
In the chat. Yeah, with video.
I can gesture at Dan.
Yeah, Dan can. I think Dan's gestures can help.
Across the table.
I don't think so.
I think Dan's point of view, I don't personally agree with it, but I think it's one that is
I'm willing to listen.
A perfectly valid point. That
I think I've made my position clear on that.
Sure, out there.
It's out there.
And discuss further. But thank you, Dan. Thank you. Thank you for pausing and making that point.
Sure thing, buddy.
It's a good one.
Thank you. Thank you, Dan.
Last week on Fascination,
Deep Space Nine's Fascination.
The music when they were doing the celebration music, the closed captioning called it woodwind music, but it was clearly a synthesizer, and it wasn't just any synthesizer. It sounded like Star Trek: The Next Generation season one.
The
synthesizer.
The music in this episode with like the Kazon strip club or something, and like the caption said like sultry jazz music, but it was like some kind of like '90s doom music or something, like some kind of sexy doom music.
Doom.
Doom, yeah, it was all like gloom and doom.
Oh, I thought you meant like the game Doom.
Jesse doesn't play those types of
video
games.
I know he doesn't.
What type of video games do you like, Jesse?
I used to like Final Fantasy.
All right.
SimCity?
Oh, yeah, I like SimCity. Yeah. F-Zero is good.
Yeah, those are good games.
Dragon Warrior.
Dragon Warrior is good.
I'm enjoying that the list keeps growing and getting sort of even like you throw F-Zero in there all of a sudden. You're like, whoa.
Star Fox.
Man, this guy's all over the place. He's going to start talking about pilot wings.
Nice. Anything else?
No.
You better be telling me everything you know.
You know.
Please, let me know.
Okay, so we've all...
Meatloaf and hamburger.
We've passed that, but we've agreed...
Let's pass on that one.
This episode has a lot of interesting stuff going on in it.
Yes, it does. Now, and what you said about it being like the premise all wrapped into one, that was like one of the first...
originally promised premise.
Right, that was like one of the first things I noticed. I was like, wait a minute.
Yeah, right from the teaser with the...
Or cold open.
Or cold open. I'm now totally confused as to which one I originally...
You always say teaser.
I say teaser and you say cold open.
Yeah.
You must have somewhere along the line convinced me about cold open because now I think I always said cold open.
I think it used to be reversed.
See, that's I feel like that.
Because back when we would talk about the new Star Trek shows and we would focus on Discovery would have like some kind of long, like hour-long cold open or something.
Well, do you ever do that thing where it's like you always do the A thing, and like you're always doing the A thing, and the A thing's wrong. It's actually the B thing you're supposed to do. So every time you're
the
like,
A thing is right, man.
So every time you go to do the B thing, you're like, wait a minute, I always do the wrong thing first. So you go back to the A thing.
I know.
The wrong thing. It's like even though you've got it in your head that you're now doing the right thing, you still think, no, I always do it the wrong the first time. So it must be the A thing. Mm.
Yeah, I've got that issue with spelling the words necessary and restaurant.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, restaurant. That's how you do it.
Yeah, that's how I think I do it. But then sometimes I'm like, well, no, that's somehow the opposite. Yeah.
Necessary is sometimes a tricky one.
Who's that comedian? I forget. It was this comedian. He was really funny. But he was all talking about like
Funny Pants McJones.
I'll figure it out. But he was talking about like words his spelling couldn't spell, and he was talking about like how the word restaurant was difficult to spell, and it was funny. But it's not funny when I'm describing it,
sure,
because it's only funny in the context of
what they're saying. Sort of carefully.
I think he was because what he says is something effective. Don't ask me to spell restaurant, but it's really funny when
it's
he's
a male comedian that you're referring to.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
that might help you along the way. You'll remember it in a bit. That's how brains work.
Yeah.
Brains work.
But yes, right from the beginning, it's as if they were like, all right, now let's do Voyager the way we said we were going to do it, which is their...
Patrice O'Neill. Yeah.
Oh, he died, didn't he?
Yeah, he did.
Sadly.
He was funny.
Very funny. Apparently a very nice, sweet guy.
Well, never heard of that guy. I'm sorry.
You would recognize him.
Maybe I've.
If you saw him.
Maybe I've seen.
But yes.
I guess you'll be spending the night alone.
So they do a lot. I forgot this is a long clip. All right.
How did you know that was a long clip?
Danny because you played it before, didn't you?
I don't think I did.
I think you did.
I don't think I did.
Well, maybe not.
But it was a long class.
They did that classic Star Trek, TV story thing where you gotta kill somebody at the beginning who's super important to everybody, even if we don't know who the fuck this person is.
Right. Mm-hmm.
They did a pretty good job.
Everybody else knows, and they all get pissed off.
Gone too far.
We understand that. The goal of this story is to say there are stakes. There is real damage being done to Voyager. They are losing actual people they care about, even if they're in people we just weren't super familiar with before.
Who is that guy? Kurt Bandera? Because apparently
Kurt Bandera.
Because Torres Balana was saying of that
he saved her life.
Near the Cardassian
and Chakotay too.
He said near the Cardassian border. So, yeah. But we don't know anything about Kurt Bandera prior to.
Bandera. It could be that the character has been on the show before. I have no particular recollection, and I didn't have time to look it
so
up.
So characters that we have known before, have we known Hogan or Jonas before?
I don't know.
I'm not sure, but we certainly have known Seska.
Seska,
we know.
I can't remember why we
deep,
know.
This is deep into Seska's story.
I can't remember why we know Seska.
Seska says Balana's on it.
No, she doesn't.
That's Seska.
Balana's on it.
Balana says that.
Balana says Balana's on it.
No, it's Seska says Balana's on it.
No, that's Balana.
Balana's on it.
Why would Balana say Balana's
on
it?
Well, Balana's on it.
She is, because that's her voice.
I think she's saying, I'm on it.
It's on the, Seska says it in that part of that simulation where Seska takes over the ship in that other episode.
Fuck are you talking about?
The episode with the two, when they got the multiple, the
that's
weird
the episode
thing.
Where you got this.
Yeah, that's a void. What was that episode called?
I forget.
I bet it was one word. Voyager liked having the one word things. Okay, Seska used to not be a Cardassian. She used to be in disguise in the Maquis and was infiltrating them, and then of course got lost in the Delta Quadrant with the Voyager, and at a certain time they figure out that she's not who she says she is, and she reverts to being a Cardassian. She hooks up with the Kazon. Seska, the funny thing is, I guess it's worth taking a moment here to talk about the Kazon, because we haven't discussed the Kazon much on the podcast, just because we haven't talked about a ton of the episodes that they've featured in. The Kazon they suck. They're stupid.
Yeah.
And they're really lame. And it's kind of like when TNG tried to introduce the Ferengi as an enemy and realized right away it wasn't going to work. With Voyager, they introduced the Kazon in Caretaker, in the pilot, and also, it still didn't work, but they're like, no, we're gonna stick to this shit for as long as we can, even though, one of the promises / potential pitfalls for Voyager as a premise is they're flung far away and they're trying to get home, so they will always be moving away. They're not like hanging out in one area. So the need to develop these antagonists that are long-term, well, they're in theory, presumably they're not going to last the whole series, right? Because they're going to leave the territory, and that can always be part of the solution of let's just keep them at bay until we can leave the territory.
Right.
The Kazon do not come off as threatening. Mm-hmm. They come off as annoying. When Seska goes over to the Kazon, all it does is it makes them look even dumber, because she's super clever and smart and she's all aggravated. And you see a little bit of that in this episode, that she's dealing with this asshole that they've dealt. This is the guy they've dealt with a few times before.
It's my Kulla?
Yeah. Maj Kulla. He's the regular. He's like the Dukat,
okay. I was thinking that even the actor seems kind of Mark Alimo-ish, but the thing is Dukat is evil devious and Kulla is like hapless brutality, basically. He's like
jackass.
He's brutish, and it's all due to the fact that they were. It's interesting that we find out that the reason that the Kazon are the way they are is because they were oppressed. So basically, he's brutish, but he was kind of it was because of his situation.
Sure.
He was so.
Yeah.
It's interesting that
which is a very fascinating and important thing to talk.
And
about.
But it's interesting that he seems so much like Dukat, even though they do have a different approach to things. They talk similarly. I have to admit something real quick.
Uh-oh.
The Balana's on it was from the episode Worst Case Scenario.
Ah, yes. That's the one Jesse was talking about.
It was spoken by Hollow Seska.
Ah, there you go.
Jesse was right.
Yeah. And so I was Ben like, and I were confused.
And I was like, Jesse.
B'Elanna's on it.
I know it's B'Elanna because listen.
B'Elanna's on it.
Look, I mean, she's on. Look, Jesse.
B'Elanna's on
it. That's a B'Elanna. That, I know it's her because listen. I mean, listen, Jesse. What's wrong with you?
There's another one where she says, "I'm on it." I was like, "Did you get that one?" And I mean, that's a different episode. Yeah.
It does sound like it does sound like B'Elanna. Sounds similar. Maybe she's affecting a little bit of a B'Elanna voice.
I'm sorry, Jesse.
It's okay, man. It's okay. I figured somebody would write in and be like, actually, Jesse was cool.
So didn't somebody think...
I'm sorry.
Somebody thought that the Chief O'Brien was Kira and not Jake.
Oh. Chief O'Brien?
Yeah, that's Jake.
But that'd be funny if it was Kira.
It's funny. I don't get it.
Yeah, these things just... That's just how these things
I don't
go.
Get it.
But anyway,
I don't get it.
You don't get it.
The Kazon, part of the problem with, look, I like this episode. It's got a lot of interesting stuff in it. However, I do think it's kind of haphazard and they just keep throwing stuff at you. And it felt a little bit like Phantom Menace-y to me.
Yes, it did. Those ships, especially at the end when the ship came down and shot all the lasers.
But not just the ships. Absolutely that.
The ship that shot like in the window.
But for me, it's more about the way they're structuring the plot and the information where it's like, here's this political intrigue. Oh, and then here's this random other thing. And here's this other thing you didn't know about, but we're inserting it here.
Here's
and
this shady guy.
And it's super interesting, but you wouldn't have known about it. Oh, and then, there's this other thing going on. And then this happens, and then that happens, and then this happens.
Mabus the train.
So they talk about Majes, they talk about Nistrums, they talk about...
Well, the Nistrum is one of the factions.
They talk. Hold on.
Okay.
They talk about Majes, they
That's
talk about...
Okay. I don't know what the point of this
is. The point is I'm just saying some
vocabulary
words. Oh my God, I'm just fucking saying something.
Okay, all right.
Like, just let me say it.
All right, go for it.
And then you can have your say.
All right.
I don't understand the point of you talking. You're not even halfway done with talking yet, but I've already decided that there's no point in what you're saying.
No, I didn't decide that.
Yes, you did. You're just like, I don't understand why you're listing these things. Okay. It's like, why don't you just wait till I finish what I'm saying?
I will wait.
Okay?
Okay.
There's Nistrums, there's Majes, there's Jawls, okay?
Jawls.
But then they also talk about the Takreet. Mm-hmm. And these are all things that, like, they don't really explain in the episode. Mm-hmm. Now, you can kind of figure out what they are.
Yes.
But the point is that they just start throwing these things at you, is what I'm saying. It's like you're talking about them throwing things at you, and they just throw all these things at you, and you just kind of have to, like, through context, kind of figure out like what they are.
But we're also watching this episode out of context. If you're watching it in context, you would probably be more familiar with the fact that Kala's faction is called the Nistrum, and then the Takreet are a different faction, because that's the whole deal with the Kazon.
And there's the Pamar.
They have all these things, and it's what they're doing is they're mimicking the Klingon houses, right? You know, we're very familiar with how the Klingon society is structured with these different houses, except in the Kazon society, it's more extreme. They're actually like all scrabbling and fighting over the same territory and stuff. Whereas the Klingon houses seems to be more of an aristocracy sort of business, right?
Then they were talking about Neelix, my contact. He was talking about the Takreet. What was he doing when the Kazon Pamar arrested him? Neelix says, my contact on the planet said that he was making a sketch of the conference site, and believe me, the Takreed are not known for their art. It's just, he's kind of like sideways referencing all these things that are kind of happening.
He's a
and
space
it's like,
creep.
And it's like, this is like time number one. You have five more times you have to say it at least during the episode. Space creep.
Is that the first time you said it?
That's the first time you said right. Space creep.
I was wondering how long it would take.
I said it earlier.
Oh, did you? I think you said it like eight times in the drinking episode. But so
except for a couple of those times it would have been more like space.
But so Neelix has all these like contacts and you don't know where he's met. Do we know where he met Tirsa from?
All we need to know is that he's actually helpful for once.
Do we know when Tirsa was like, I'm surprised they let you back in here considering what happened last time?
No. That's classic detective story,
But I mean, it's that sort of idea is sort that is laid out in the very first scene, because the very first scene starts in the middle of a battle. And at first I was watching and I was like, is Paramount Plus fucking up? Like, what the fuck's going on? And then I quickly realized it's like, oh, it doesn't really matter why they're fighting. It doesn't matter what's happening to who. All we need to know is that some shit's going down. But interestingly, the episode kind of ends like nothing has happened either.
Right. And, but they, what is, they were able to fix their ship up or something.
Well, the first of all, like, the episode kind of ends and it's like nothing has happened. But what's also what I kind of like about the episode is they're kind of worse off at the end. After that whole thing is over, they're just like,
now everybody hates them.
Like, everything got, like, everyone's, like, their shit just got fucked up by trying to make these
Except,
alliances.
As Jesse points out, at the end of the episode, they make up, they actively make a point to have Janeway go department by department and be like, everything's reset with the ship, at least. All right, we got to take a break.
Let's get out of here.
When we get back, we'll do the front matter. There's now the middle matter. And continue the discussion of Voyager's alliances. Be right back.
Shall we? I look forward to it. Dismissed.
And we're back.
A lot of people think that we're not going to make it out of here alive.
Power all weapon systems and stand ready.
Hurry up!
Interesting combination.
I went to when I looked up the quote, "Balana's on it," Star Trek Voyager, Gemini's AI overview. I'm telling you something you could look up yourself, but I'm doing that thing where I'm like, I'm instead of like telling you to look something up that you could do yourself, I'm going to look it up and I'm going to tell you the thing that you could have looked up yourself.
Dan's look them ups.
But this is
another way of saying you're more invested in the answer to this question than I am.
Well, I think it's relevant.
Okay.
Says, this is an iconic, highly specific quote from Star Trek Voyager. It specifically It specifically refers to season 3, 25, worst case scenario, where the crew discovers an unfinished holodeck simulation created by Tuvok about a Maquis mutiny. In the Holo novel's narrative, written to test security and crew loyalty, a holographic Chakotay and Seska are discussing an engineering problem. Seska reassures Chakotay by saying, "Don't worry, B'Elanna's on it," before an alarm goes off about a saboteur. The entire it says the entire episode is highly meta, poking fun at the characters' dynamics and the long 70-year journey home. Now, I didn't know that this was a highly, like, an iconic quote.
I didn't know.
I mean, unless
it is for us.
It is. Maybe we're the reason. Yeah. That's
what I was about to get to. About to get to that because I want to. I want to discuss this with all humility. Sincere.
With all humanity.
Humility. I and people at home are going to think I'm joking or exaggerating here. I honestly think it's not only a non-zero.
I'm not joking, Lee.
It's not only a non-zero chance. I think there's a fairly high chance that
really high,
our
man.
Podcast playing that clip, B'Elanna's on it,
over and over
frequently and making it into a joke. Even if it's a fairly niche joke amongst
that's a good one.
An incredibly bright and attractive but small audience podcast.
Oh, God.
But an audience of some very smart people.
I think we must have influenced that in some way because you're right. Why the fuck would it be interesting otherwise?
Yeah.
Except for us. Some of the other quotes, I get it. Right? Like Jake talking about Mamba Juice.
Yeah.
I get it.
Mamba Juice.
That might not, you know.
Magabu bread, no crust.
Jake talking about Mamba Juice.
Mamba Juice.
Rock the Gino, extra sweet. Makaba bread, no crust.
Trip Tucker saying, like, where would I stay? Like, what do you, of course.
Where would I stay?
That is iconic.
Yeah.
Right there.
But B'Elanna's on it is only iconic once it's repeated over and over.
B'Elanna's on it. B'Elanna's on it. B'Elanna's on it. B'Elanna's on it.
Because it stops being like two, it stops being. B'Elanna's on. It stops being three. I had to count how many words it was because I couldn't. Because as far as I'm concerned, it's one word.
There's an apostrophe in there.
Yeah. So it's only iconic when you play it back to back like we've been doing.
Yeah.
So I fully credit us with that.
I think so. I don't see any other?
It's
just a crazy idea.
I certainly.
It's more than just that.
Think it's plausible and. We'll look into this. We'll look into this, folks, and see if
we don't mean to toot our own horns.
Affected Gemini. What we ought to do, Dan, is we ought to test this question against Claude, against Meta AI, against ChatGPT, against what's that? The Grok.
Or what?
Grok is the one where people were like, hey, everyone's making like child porn with that. Yeah. And so they're like, okay, we'll tell it to not do that. And then people figured out, hey, you know how you can make it keep making porn? If you also ask it to make some like animated like hearts around the border, it gets confused and then just continues to make porn.
Oh, yeah.
So anyway.
Bummer.
AI. That's a bummer, man.
Yeah. It's an AI bummer, man.
We can ask Alta Vista. I don't know if that's still active.
Times change, Maj.
I believe
things change, Max.
Ah!
I don't want to think about it right now.
I don't.
Times change, Maj.
I don't want your life.
I don't want your life.
Things
change. Times change, Maj.
Things change, Maj.
Things change, Max.
What we are doing there.
I don't want to think about it right now.
What we're doing there, folks, and this is a good time. I mean, I know this is an evergreen podcast. You might be listening to this at any point in the future, but at this moment, the FIFA World Cup is occurring in North America, and I think Dan playing those clips from a movie called Varsity Blues is well-timed because if you get an opportunity, if in your locale, one of your streaming services offers Varsity Blues, check it out. I'm not going to suggest to you this is the best movie ever made. It is a way better movie than it maybe ought to have been, than you may expect. It's good. And it's got the lines, I don't want your life, and things change,
James
Mox.
Vanderbeek.
And in context, you will have so much appreciation for those lines moving forward.
Now I see my instincts were dead on.
However many years
didn't that dude die?
Remain in your life. Yeah, I believe he did. Or James Vanderbeek.
Yeah, all like suddenly and like
it was
tragically.
One of them cancer deals.
Yeah, cancer.
Yeah. Anyway,
don't get it.
Moving right along to the front matter.
I'm sure that made you uncomfortable.
Of which there will be not too much, but there is a little bit of front matter. I'm glad we were able to get almost right into the discussion of the episode this week. That was a fun little thing to do. But we did have an email, and this is a reference to...
These are our messages.
Thank you, Dan. This is a reference to a conversation that was begun last week. On last episode, on episode 344, when, as Dan mentioned earlier, we discussed the Deep Space Nine episode Fascination.
Evidence!
Yes. That's from Waltz, that quote.
I'm not joking, Lee.
That's from Where No Man Has Gone Before, I believe. That is from fuck. That's from, is that from the? That's from
lots
the,
of TAS.
Is that from the? Is that from the TAS with the? With the, is that with the tribbles? Is it the
sabotage?
Or is that the Kirk is a jerk?
It's a few TAS.
Sabotage.
Kirk is a jerk.
Kirk is a jerk. It's great. TAS is amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
If you haven't seen it, come on. Don't be lame.
We've covered it the entire.
Some of my favorite episodes of this podcast.
Yeah, the music is something.
Okay, anyway. Bam, 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 bam.
So lonely.
So lonely.
James Doohan got a lot of money by doing every voice, pretty much.
Yeah.
Okay.
Perfectly.
We have
absolutely purposed.
We have dilly-dallied, and now we return to the front matter. The email, which continues...
This isn't a democracy, Chakotay.
Conversation from last week, which itself was continuing a conversation from the previous week, just to catch you all up. Jesse and I did a podcast where we were drinking a bit, and somehow the topic of pickled tomatoes came up, and neither of us were sure whether or not such a thing existed. Then the following week, in response, in the intervening time, we got an email from Dan's brother's brother, Rob.
Yes.
Dan's brother's brother?
Yeah, technically he is my brother's brother. Yeah,
Dan has two brothers.
So are you.
So what I said
two brothers.
May have
You're
sounded,
your brother's brother, too.
May have sounded like an inarticulate mistake, an error of speech, but no, thanks to Jesse, I didn't even think of that. Grammatically, what
we
I said.
We don't have to decide everything right now.
Could have been taken not as an error, but rather a playful way to refer to Dan's brother, Rob. And
forgive me if I'm a bit skeptical.
To summarize Rob's communication, what he had indicated was that there was such a thing as pickled tomatoes, at least pickled fried green.
Quite right.
Fried or pickled green tomatoes. And then he referenced a recipe for pickled green tomato relish that was hung in Dan's kitchen.
Oh. I don't think so.
Right? So I read this email.
It was hung in.
I gave no forewarning
recipe
to Dan that his brother had written in, because this makes for a more spontaneous and entertaining podcast. I'm sure even if you're not in the game, I'm sure you can figure that out.
Or perhaps it's all you understand.
Wait a minute. Dan has a couple different, like, sort of tapestry picture of things that are like recipes, now that I remember.
Here's the thing.
A few of them?
Here's you have a couple?
I thought I had one.
Here's the thing. Okay.
I thought you had one for tomato sauce.
So
no, the tomato sauce is on the same one as the raisins.
So here's the thing. This is all perfect, because what you guys are doing is perfect, because Jesse was saying something. Jesse and I have both spent time in Dan's house. We've helped watch his cats. So we have some familiarity with it. Jesse had suggested Dan has two recipes that Dan, from Dan's recollection of his own house in which he lives currently, was, I think I only have one.
But there's this other one that has a pickle recipe.
But no. Here's the thing. Here, we got to get to the new email, right? Right? We got to get to the new email. But first, I have to conclude previously on, right? Okay. So last week, I read the email from Rob stating that Dan could give us more details. When Dan returned to the show, he could give us more details about the concept of pickled tomatoes, which, Jesse, you and I were confused about or uncertain about, that his brother Rob suggested Dan would be able to advise us because of this recipe that hangs in Dan's kitchen. Now,
I'd like to know what you have to say about that.
I read this email, and Dan is chortling along and amused and delighted that his brother has written in. But at the end of the email, Dan had a kind of a queer look on his face, and I'm using that term in the literary sense. While I was reading the email, I was like, oh, well, Dan's kind of got a funny expression going on. And then so the email concludes, and then Dan says, I don't think that's the recipe in my house. I've got a different recipe. I think Rob's confused, right? That's what you were said, right?
That's what I said.
That's what you said. So
I think I've made my position clear on that.
Now, I think we've provided all the necessary context so that I can now read you Rob's newest email. Rob sent me the following. He said, my sincerest apologies to my brother Dan. He is correct.
I knew it.
The green tomato pickle recipe is not on his wall.
I know where it is.
But instead, on my wall.
Oh, damn.
You don't get it.
I am apparently an idiot who doesn't know what pictures are hanging on my own walls.
That's like, you don't get it.
Attached is a photo of the recipe. And he attaches a photo. I responded, that's hilarious and awesome and an excellent evidence of you and Dan's brotherhood.
Evidence!
And that's why, Dan, I was laughing now, because you were like, I think I've only got one. Yeah. And then Rob responds, please note that I've never actually made the recipe. Maybe this year. So
hell yeah.
So you are perceptive, Captain.
So just to conclude that three-part story, yes, tomatoes.
I am relieved, because I was like,
can and are pickled.
Yeah.
Dan does not have such a recipe hanging in his house. Rob has it in his own house. But Dan has a different recipe.
Yeah, so when Rob
hanging
makes
in yours.
Rob makes his. Now I was actually, after that episode, I was thinking, like, maybe I'll make this raisin meatball, because it has a tomato sauce, but that's not the same thing. It's not the same as pickled tomatoes. It's more of just like a normal tomato sauce.
Yeah, I wouldn't.
And so I was thinking, I was like, well, I've never actually made that recipe. Maybe I should make that recipe, and Rob's going to make his recipe, and maybe we can, like, each make it and then, like, you know, FedEx some of it to each other or
sure,
something. Yeah. Or UPS, DHL.
Just, we got to figure out a way to monetize
DHL
it.
DHL would take a long time. Might go bad.
Might go bad.
Might go bad.
Might go bad. Might go bad.
Put that onion. Put that onion in DHL. Great. Okay. And by the way, we've mentioned it before, but if you weren't aware, occasionally we do an It's Not Star Trek, and we did one called It's Got Pickles.
Caught him right in the face.
Go check it out. It's a great episode.
It really is.
Maybe we'll follow
it's
that up.
It's a crisp.
Crisp. Well, some of crisp. It is crisp. Some of them. Some of those pickles were fucking lame. That was the point,
that's right?
That's
right.
That was the point. Okay.
Egregious error. Egregious error. Such an egregious error. He won't look kindly on anyone who's made such an egregious error. Such an egregious error. Egregious error. Egregious error. Such an egregious error. Look kindly on anyone who's made such an egregious error. Egregious error.
Now, we're going to call what Dan did there a segue.
Sure.
An excellent segue back into our discussion about this episode of Alliances.
There's so many alliances.
Not just
attempt.
The one. Yeah. Lots of different alliances.
I really don't want to hear about it.
I just thought when I was watching this and writing notes and being super intellectual and
super smart,
clever about this, mm-hmm. I was thinking, I was like,
Patrick, an intellectual.
What a you're like, pretentious. Moi.
See, that's, you may be right.
That's both a pretentious for being a Fawlty Towers joke and like in and of itself, it's a great, it's the punchline when you give the punchline to the joke.
Right as usual.
Right, yeah. Well, there you go.
Too small and dry.
Yes, too small and dry. Two small dry cherries. Okay. I mean, most people have had to have seen Fawlty Towers. Right?
Come on.
That have listened to this podcast?
Come
probably.
On.
Okay. No. What I was thinking was...
What were you thinking, Patrick? What was it you were thinking? Tell me. I want to know. I want to know.
No.
Pick up the phone and let me know. Pick up the phone. Pick up the phone. Let me know.
What is it, like Pennsylvania or something?
Pick up the phone.
I enjoy these moments.
Kind of like Baltimore, a Maryland. Yeah, it's like Maryland.
These moments are
phone.
Helpful for like when people sometimes think that I'm the one kind of ganging up on Dan and fucking with Dan shit. Like it's just helpful when these...
Yes, Maj.
Pick up the phone.
Pick up the phone. The phone.
Dan's like, I can keep the intrusive thoughts at bay all week.
See, Philadelphia accent is all like, ace. Kick his
That's
ace.
That's right, kick his ace.
Kick his ace.
Those kids.
It's all ace.
Yeah.
Okay.
That Veronica Vaughn is one piece of ash. Yeah,
that's a Billy Madison joke, which is an Adam Sandler film.
But he's not from Philadelphia.
Yeah, we're being very Western centric, very Maryland centric, very East Coast.
East Coast.
Mid-Atlantic.
Would you want to start imitating people from other countries? I don't think that's a proper route to go down.
We don't have to imitate people, but we could
We are very East Coast.
Talk about
folks.
RRR or Cholet or another movie like that.
Cirque du Soleil.
Cirque du Soleil. Man, that shit, they do some fucked up shit, man. But that's a story for another day. Mm-hmm. No, what I was getting at was...
What were you getting at, Patrick?
Look, oh, man. We've already talked about...
Please,
how
let
this,
me know.
This podcast, this episode is packed full of...
Stuff.
Interesting concepts. Neelix is actually useful. Voyager's actually getting damaged.
Doctor gives him 75 milligrams of impedrazine.
I wrote down, literally the first thing I wrote down was impedrazine. And I was wondering, Dan, do you usually look these up to see if it's a real drug or a fake drug?
I often do, but I was going to look this one up.
I think you had to assume this is a made up drug because it sounds ludicrous.
Because they're always made up. They're usually made up. Yeah. And you can usually tell when they're made up.
Not always, but...
Well, you can usually tell when they're made up, and I just looked it up now, and it's a fictional narcotic.
Here's the thing. I would push back on that in the sense that I think one of the reasons you look them up is that they're probably made up, but like...
Are you trying to tell me why I do the things that I'm doing?
No.
I'm like telling you why I do something. You're like, no, Dan, that's not why you do this.
This is why you do it.
Yeah, right. Are you trying to tell me how to be?
Right, you are mischaracterizing the thrust of this conversation.
I'll thrust you.
The back of your throat. What I was suggesting was that generally speaking, when you look up the name of the drug, yes, it often turns out that it's made up for Star Trek, but the drug sounds realish. It usually doesn't sound like fucking impedrazine. Usually it's like colostrum or something. Right. It sounds like it maybe it could be real.
Tetracycline.
Well, that's whatever. Just how you see it.
All right. Well, yeah. Oh, that's how I see it. Okay. Now,
hypospread.
I have very nearly arrived at my point.
Do it.
Which is that this episode has all these interesting things going on in it, but it seems scattered. There's a vibe to it that made me, I was having difficulty engaging with it. And I was wondering, I was like, what does this compare to? What's a version of this that does it better? And what immediately came to mind was the DS9 episode In the Pale Moonlight, which also
But you love that episode. You bring that up a lot.
Yes, but what I'm saying is specific to this episode. That episode has this brilliant framing device of Sisko's log, which allows him to provide a tremendous amount of exposition, but with a lot of emotion and acting. Mm. And even though he's literally just telling you stuff, and then it's going to flashbacks of what's happening. That episode has new characters introduced that have to be considered important, new sort of political things going on, new poisons, new this and that. But it hangs together much better, I think, in part because of just how they structured it with Sisko telling the story, as opposed to the story just kind of happening, and just the individual pieces kind of like going together a little bit better, as well as I think them doing more unpredictable things. Because I think another issue with this particular episode, Alliances, is that as interesting as the things they introduce are, many of the things end up being sort of predictable. Maj Kalla is a jackass. And what were the people called?
Mavis the Trabe.
The Trabe.
Mavis the Trabe.
Betrayed.
Betrayed.
They got to trip.
That was kind of predictable, right? I mean, I know I've seen this episode before, so I can't say I don't remember what I thought when I first watched it when it was on air, but you know, watching it, like, as soon as these people are introduced, you're like, yeah, they're about to do some fucked up shit. They got a fucked up plan, right? I don't know if that was just me, but to me, it was just kind of like, okay, sure, it was neat, but it was predictable.
I mean, it was pretty much predictable that they double-crossed them as soon as...
What was the guy's name?
Mabus.
Mabus the Trabe.
Mabus the Trabe. Yeah. Even before he was like, Captain, you should come with me. It's like you kind of knew, like even before the rumbling started. Yeah. But I also thought that the ending, the sort of message at the end, didn't really fit with what happened. Because at the end, Janeway goes, in a part of space where there are few rules, it's more important than ever that we hold fast to our own. Yeah. In a region where shifting allegiances are commonplace, we have to have something stable to rely on, and we do. The principles and ideals of the Federation. As far as I'm concerned, those are the best allies we could have. Mm. Now, the problem is that she's saying, like, we should have stuck with Starfleet all along. Yeah. But she, like, okay, it was Chakotay's idea to ally with the Kazon. Mm-hmm. That didn't go down right because, like, admittedly, that was tough negotiating on Janeway's part. Yeah. Kala fucked that one up. Yeah. Like, everyone agreed that, like, when Kala, like, looked at Tuvok and was like, come on, tell her what to do. He was like, no, I'm not joining on your side, man. But Janeway is the one who wanted to join with the Trabe. At the very end, Chakotay was like, join with the Kazon. Janeway was like, no, we got to join with the Trabe because they're kind of like us. Yeah. Culturally, they seem similar. Yeah. They kind of look more like us. These Kazon are all different and stuff.
The Trabe seemed more white.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Which is a little weird.
So,
right.
So, like,
right, there was for Star Trek, the Trabe were like very white.
Yes. Yeah. So it was hurt. So white.
Maybe that was part of the clue is they were going to be fucked up in the end.
So if they had like made an alliance with the Kazon, things would have probably been a lot better. But it was Janeway's idea to make friends with the Trabe. Mm-hmm. And what for the sake of, and she did it for the sake of peace and Starfleet. And she was like, they align with our belief system is basically what she said. Yeah. And she was just like, you know, oh, they deserve to be forgiven, blah, blah. This is the Starfleet way. It was the Starfleet way that kind of fucked everything up in the end. Like, and I'm not saying that Starfleet is bad in any way. I'm just saying that her summation did not follow from the actions that happened in the episode.
I think another way to put it, I think I'm going to be saying exactly the same thing you are. I just phrased it a little differently, which was throughout this episode, a number of people present arguments as if they're like convincing, but then those arguments are not proven out. Mm-hmm. And like you said, Janeway says one thing, but then kind of does some other stuff. And then the end of the episode, like, what did we learn? Mm-hmm. There was nothing. It's not, I'm trying to figure out, I don't know how to articulate this, because it's not that nothing happened.
Well, we definitely didn't learn that the Starfleet way was the best way. Yeah. I mean, maybe Starfleet way is the best way, but we didn't learn it from this episode.
Yeah, yes.
And that's how they presented it.
But they also didn't fully do the Starfleet way.
No. Yeah.
So then you're like, you can't, as a result of that, you can't 100%. Well, and then it turns out the Starfleet way is all about, like, where Tuvok comes in is the Starfleet way is, the problem wasn't with the idea. The problem was that Chakotay was presenting it as, you tried it your way, maybe we should try it the Maquis way. And she's like, fuck that. And when she went to Tuvok, Tuvok was like, I'm going to tell you the exact same thing, but I'm going to give you I'm going to frame it in a way that makes it fit your philosophy, which is, by the way, that's just how most of the world works. We all we find a way to justify the thing we want to do in the first place.
I mean, to me, it seemed like what she was saying was like, we tried the Maquis way. Look what happened. Everything got fucked up. We got to stick with Starfleet. That's what I thought she was trying to say, which is not what happened at all. The reason shit got fucked up was mostly because of her. Like, not all her fault, but she played a part, and that part was her aligning with the Trabe.
Quick to ally with the Trabe, as opposed to even for a moment thinking, you know what, these people who are being, like, super nice to us, maybe they're toadying up to it. It's like when you go to a restaurant, if with the server is really nice to you in the U.S., not in most of the rest of the world that actually pays people a salary. But in the United States, you might deal with a service industry person and maybe they're really nice to you. And part of that is that they want to maximize whatever tip you'll give them. Nothing wrong with that, but that's just sort of like an understood thing. And she didn't even, in terms of geopolitics, that's definitely something you want to consider. The first time you meet these people, just because they're like kind of white, kind of nice, and they're kind of like we're like, and to give credit, I really did enjoy. I don't think this is like a stupid episode. It's just like a little all over the place. But for example, presenting this Trabe guy as admitting fault of
yeah,
his
I like that. I like that he was
cool.
Yeah, I thought that was good.
And by the way, certainly, I don't even think he 100% was even lying about that.
No,
but I do think he was like, well, now we're the on the run, and we want to protect our people.
Yeah,
we'll do
because
anything.
I mean, because he was saying it's his fault, but he simultaneously was like, it's our fault, but he was also like, even though we're admitting our fault, he's like, that doesn't change the fact that we think that these people are this way, and they are always going to be this way.
And
they
if we can fuck them up, then that can give us a chance to, like, you know, whatever.
Yeah. So he kind of stuck like that, but you know,
and I'm not going to draw any specific parallels because I don't think the writers
that was an episode
were,
of Star Trek
parallel
that's an episode of Star Trek that longtime listener Grayson would really like us to do.
It's the best part.
Fans of Shawshank Redemption will now all be creeped out.
Sorry about that.
Did you notice the bit with anybody want to talk about this with Tuvok and his flower? And he made like this hybrid flower.
Of like the
you made this extremely convenient analogy. That he grew.
And this is also the same. This is the same season with the Tuvok's episode.
Ah,
so it's sort of pointing towards the Tuvok's episode that involves.
We never knew what happened to
Tuvok
the
orchid.
Oh,
well,
that is interesting.
Because
yeah.
in Tuvok's, it was Tuvok and Neelix that got merged together, but with the orchid.
Also a funky flower.
And we never learned what happened to the orchid after the whole
business. The South American orchid onto a Vulcan
Well, that's
favonate,
the one, that's the one from
plant?
This episode.
Yeah.
It was a different
orchid. I think it was an orchid they found
on that planet.
That was a planet.
When Janeway understood the analogy he was making, she made like one of her super sideways Janeway smiles. At the beginning, she did too. When she all like, she didn't have coffee. I guess when she hangs out with Tuvok, she has a Vulcan spice tea. Yeah. What do you think? What do you think it tastes like?
I don't know, but I really want to fucking know.
Do Vulcans have spices?
I like tea. Well,
apparently, they do because they have spice
just in their tea.
In their tea. Janeway was all when she was like telling people like what the deal was, and then Hogan all came up and was all like being like, let's just give him her shit. You know,
Hogan. He was like, listen, brother.
Yeah, right. Hogan, right.
gonna mutiny, brother. What's that smell?
So,
that's from the movie No Holds Barred, yeah. Starring Hulk Hogan, who's a piece of shit.
But Janeway goes, is there anything you have to say about that? I assure you, you can speak freely. She tells Hogan, you can speak freely. So he does, and then she gets pissed off at him. You know, and then I like when she leaves the room, Chakotay's like, Janeway, and she's like, don't worry, Chakotay. I understand. He was angry. She's like,
can you do it in your Janeway voice?
No, I don't. I feel self-conscious.
But why?
Because it's weird.
But it's so nice.
You
Everybody
do it.
Loves it.
You do it.
What did you say?
She's.
What's the line? You got to give me a line reading.
Chakotay. Don't worry, Chakotay. Then she goes, it's all right, Commander. I can't even do it now. No, but
slowly pull your dick out.
But she was like, she was walking out the hall.
Stop it! That's so gross. Unzip your pants.
Stop it!
I was weirded out when she's
saying a thing.
I know, but consider this an aside. When she gets to Tuvok's room, you'll like this aside, Dan. And Tuvok is like, "You are rarely in my corner."
Yeah,
and I remember each time I was like, "Remember?"
Yeah, they're all Polly boys.
Lonely lady.
Anyway, I was just saying that when they left the room, she goes, it's all right, Commander. I know Hogan's upset. He and Bandera are close. Yeah. And then and she's all like assuming that like Chakotay was going to apologize for like what Hogan was saying. Yeah. But really, he wasn't saying that at all. He was basically saying like, you know.
Well, I'll note out. I'll note how to. What the fuck?
Because I like this. One thing I like in this episode is like Chakotay is. This is the only time Chakotay is like balls out in her face. Yeah. Like, that sounded weird.
But okay, let's take a quick break. We're gonna talk about Chakotay's balls. We're gonna talk about Hogan and his Hogan gay coded with that other fella, the
Jonas.
Sneaky, Jonas.
My name is Jonas.
Commander Chakotay.
And about a bunch of other stuff. All right. We will be right back.
Red alert.
Chief, beam our former guest back to his vessel.
Get to the chopper. Beam our former guest back to the vessel.
Get back in the chopper. You the dorm in the jet batter.
I didn't notice until you just played that
Maybe
tape.
The tree.
How that the way that line is written is that's like, okay, they sat there for 3 hours being like, she's got to have like, she's got to say something real fucking clever like right now.
Right the fuck now.
Right the fuck now. All right. Be right back. And we're back.
Was there something else?
I mean, I suppose a few other things.
Ogla and Relora.
Ooh.
Okay.
Ogla
Is
and...
from the Dark Crystal?
No. Why would I be talking about that?
I don't know.
That's a good joke,
I don't know what the hell you're talking
about. Make a deal an alliance with the Kazon, with one of their factions or two. If we had the Ogla and the Relora as our allies, is that like the Pamar and the Nistrith?
Those are other factions. I remember the Kazon Ogla. I think the Kazon Ogla were led by a more clever, mean person.
So there was Minas of the Pamar. There was Surat of the Most. The Minas of the Pamar was kind of fancy. Mm-hmm. Surat of the Mostral was tough. Loran of the Hobai was kind of like a young intellectual type. Valek of the Oglamar was kind of like a
100% sure what you mean by that.
It's kind of like he's just kind of like he looked clumsy or something.
Clumsy,
you know.
Could you compare
they all
had
him silly hair?
Could you compare him to a character in media in the last 100 years?
He just seemed like a kind of a clumsy guy.
Sure, but is that like a unique new character archetype that's been developed on this show, or
you know, like someone who's going, you know, kind of like if
is there like on The Simpsons? Is there a character on Car 54?
If the Swedish Chef was like rough around the edges and not Swedish, was just kind of like.
You mean like punk rock?
No, Swedish Chef is not punk rock.
I know, but you said rough around the edges. You said
it's
not.
Just kind of like, you know, just kind of like bumbling around. He seemed like a bumbler. You know what I mean? A bumbler. He's a bumbler. What can I say? He's a bumbler.
Did he fight with his tomatoes?
Yeah. Then there was Kulla of the Nistream. He was high society, and you could tell that because he had the biggest hair. His hair was absurd.
Oh, man.
That's the deal with the...
they all had crazy hair, but yeah, his hair was definitely...
Yeah, the Kazon was the hair, and the hair is a controversial thing. The hair is interesting, but it is also stupid.
I hate it.
And I think it I think one of the
feathery
deals,
feathery or something.
Well, I think one of the things was is that in terms of
like bird-like
artistry, in terms of makeup artistry, it was top of the line.
Yeah, I bet it took a long fucking
complex,
time.
Yes, but the problem was is because the Kazana's characters were so stupid, it was energy that is, some would argue, was wasted.
Well, maybe their hair just naturally does that.
Well, my point in, I'm talking out of universe. I'm talking production style.
But what does it have to do? Why does it have to do with the character being stupid? Because
I'm
they
saying
they don't have to be smart to make their hair like that because it's naturally
that. I'm saying.
I really don't want to hear about it.
That when you are an artisan hired to use your skills,
I understand,
and apply the highest caliber of this type of artistry.
Help me understand.
Probably
that.
In the world, in Hollywood, you're working in Hollywood. You're working for Paramount. Paramount, Desilu, whoever.
It's gone too far.
Viacom, whoever you're working for, but you are a professional, and you're hired to do this job. You do all this work, and then it goes on TV, and the guy's all like, "That's what I'm saying."
Splendid motivation, to be sure.
It's like when you see the movie that's got the beautiful special effects, but the movie is stupid, mm-hmm. right?
Maybe they didn't know that the characters are going to be stupid.
I don't know what they knew or didn't know. I'm just saying.
How do you think they get their hair like that?
Well, we were just kind of talking about that. So they got like.
You think they cut loose from each other's hair?
Okay. So what Jesse?
That one might be a problem.
Yeah. So Jesse, what Jesse has just done there is, he used a phrase. I think he was referencing perhaps Elvis.
Perhaps.
Elvis.
Perhaps.
And we're talking about Elvis Presley here. There are a few other Elvises around.
Oh yeah.
But Elvis Presley purportedly had a saying he would occasionally tell people, or at least at one time told somebody.
Caught him right in the face.
That there was, quote, and I'm not endorsing this quote, this is simply a quote purportedly from Elvis, that, quote, as Elvis, quote.
They should break a few of my bones.
To be sure, Elvis said, quote.
Quote. Patrick is quoting Patrick. No. Patrick is quoting himself when he says that.
Quoting Elvis.
Quoting Patrick.
That there's, quote, nothing better than cutting loose in a young girl's hair.
You know, we could have gone this whole episode without having said that, but
it's
that
a
was,
historical
that was your
thing.
Decision,
it's
not
a historical
mine.
Thing. I didn't even bring up the whole Hamburger James incident.
Oh, no.
So look it up. You can look up the Elvis's TCB code. And the hair business, and the time he said, "Look at all the babies we just killed."
Oh man!
Watch your tongue.
Because that was a case of premature Elvis ejaculation, and that's what he said to the person.
That's when he didn't mean to cut loose.
Don't just talk about that here.
He giggled and he said, "Look at all the babies we just killed."
I don't think we can afford to keep doing business as usual.
Oh, poor guy. I mean, I don't know. Yeah, there was also that time he was like, ran out in front of his, he was shooting his gun in his yard because he kept saying he saw snakes in his yard.
Mm-hmm.
That was in front of people. Elvis.
Elvis. I guess you'll be spending the night alone.
Anyways.
Elvis didn't do no drugs.
Speaking of Chakotay going balls out.
Yes, thank you, Dan.
So, like, Janeway says, nothing we've been through with the Kazon would lead me to believe they're trustworthy. I can't imagine making a deal with them. And here's where Chakotay, some might say, steps out of line a little. He goes, with all due respect, maybe that's because your imagination is limited by Starfleet protocols.
Maybe that's because your imagination is limited by Starfleet protocols.
I mean, that's the most fucked up thing Chakotay's probably ever said to her.
Oh, send him to the brig.
I mean, he's like Chakotay got uncharacteristically like real with Janeway in this episode, which was cool. I liked it.
He's like, I'm still my.
I wanted to see more of that.
The thing is, so as many listeners will know, Ron Moore was keen to work with his old friend Brandon Braga on Voyager, and he thought the idea of Voyager was a really interesting idea to play with. However, Ron Moore critiqued the way the show went because they didn't seem to get damaged enough. There wasn't enough drama. There wasn't enough of the real politic. And so when Ron Moore made the new version of Battlestar Galactica,
that's what he took to it.
What Dan's talking about, that was like the first 5 minutes, basically, right? It's like right at the beginning is immediately a debate as to whether when our society doesn't exist anymore except for us, what is the argument to stand with those society's philosophical ideals and whatnot. Now, Battlestar Galactica is an extreme version of that, and Voyager is also a relatively extreme version of that. But what we're meant as audience to consider, at least when the episodes and stuff are done in an interesting fashion, is what parts of our own culture, our own traditions, what should we kind of think about the value those provide to us, and that how that value might change if the context we're living in changes. It doesn't have to be that society is destroyed. Maybe we move to a different place.
Maybe just went to the Delta
Quadrant. Maybe times change, etc. It is an interesting thing to think about, the debate about when and how to think about the values you hold and whether or not they are relevant in the situation you find yourself in. And Chakotay is offering an argument here for doing something different. Tuvok, in a different way, later does something similar. They don't go into it like super far. And as we discussed earlier, as Dan pointed out, by the end of the episode, that doesn't seem like they've actually asked any questions or answered any of them. We haven't learned very much.
Nope.
But they've posed some interesting
thoughts
and ideas.
Speaking of thoughts and ideas, that puzzle that Tursa was doing, I was looking that up. So he had to move. I wasn't clear on the context of that because he had to move two edges to turn a dodecahedron into an icosahedron, right? Snap. Now, I don't know if he had to move two pieces total or if he was already into the game already and already moved some pieces, because there is no way to take a dodecahedron, move two pieces, and turn it into an icosahedron. But there is a puzzle related to a dodecahedron turning into an icosahedron, because they're geometric duals, which means they're interchanging vertices for faces. They are frequently used together in physical 3D assembly puzzles. There's a puzzle ball, which is a popular 3D printed interlocking puzzle made of 60 pieces.
Although this one was all flat.
Which is another problem. But it says, depending on how you look at the 3D finished ball, the tiles align to simultaneously show the 12 pentagons of a dodecahedron and the 20 triangles of an icosahedron. There's also the platonic solid sets, which is a wooden or magnetic stem puzzle kits, challenge you to build 5 platonic solids because the two shapes...
That's where the penises touch, but like not in a, you know...
Because the two shapes share the exact number of edges, 30. They give you exactly 30 magnetic rods and then force you to solve how to rearrange the vertex hubs to convert a dodecahedron into an icosahedron.
That was probably
some form of the platonic solid sets, which is why I wonder if maybe he was already a few steps into the game or something. He was like, I just got two left. Or if he was supposed to do two total. It wasn't clear.
Or was it, I was thinking the other option is maybe you're allowed to move two per, like, turn.
But it was just him doing it, so there's only him.
Yeah, but I'm saying, like, if it's an iterative thing, I must explain.
But what is a turn when it's just you?
I can't answer that question because all the things you were talking about, I understood the individual words, and I believe you, and it sounded really cool, and I like vertices. Since I've been a kid, I've liked vertices, right? You know, I'm all about the vertices, 2D, 3D, whatever. But I'm really not clever enough in this domain to know how to gamify this. But I wanted to sound smart by suggesting that maybe you can move like two per turn. Because, you know, there's sometimes puzzles like that where it's like like those slidey puzzles where you can slide things around, but you're limited to where you can slide at each thing. You could consider each move a turn.
But how many turns do you get?
I don't know that answer.
Like, because you say it says per turn, but then, like,
yeah,
what's a turn, and like, how many do you get?
Yeah,
What do you call the shape that's like eight triangles, like an eight-sided die?
An octahedron?
That's just called an octahedron.
I don't know. Seems like it would be.
More sense.
I don't know.
I guess you're right.
The same number of faces meet at every corner. They share a fascinating geometric relationship. Dodecahedron has 12. Icosahedron has 20. Icosahedron. They both have 30 edges. So that's a clue right there. The face shape for a dodecahedron is a regular pentagon. In icosahedron, the face shape is an equilateral triangle.
They're the most round.
This is interesting. Okay, here's a clue. In a dodecahedron has 12 faces. An icosahedron has 20 faces.
What is this a clue to? Remind me.
This is a clue. Just listen, you'll understand. Okay. A dodecahedron has... A dodecahedron has 12 faces. An icosahedron has 20 faces. A dodecahedron has 20 vertices. And an icosahedron has 12 vertices. Ooh. So one has X amount of faces, the other has Y amount of faces, and then that first one has Y amount of vertices, and the other has X amount of vertices.
That's they
have
pretty
the,
tight.
They have the reverse amount of faces and vertices.
Yeah, I dig that.
So that means something.
Yeah. And they're both like the roundest kind of thing besides a sphere. They come out to be rather round solids.
Now, does a sphere have no angles or an infinite amount of angles?
I don't know about that. You're better equipped to answer that.
You said that in a funny voice, which makes me think you're involved in a whole sort of deep web.
The deep web conversation
about that precise question.
You ever think about cutting loose in a Kazon's hair?
That's what I was talking about.
Like,
oh, were you talking
that's
about
how
that?
They got their hair like?
Probably no joke.
Jesse beat me to the punch.
I'm not trying to be gross, but Voyager was on when we were, you know, college.
Jesse, you probably said it all quiet, so I didn't hear you.
Yeah. Did you say that earlier?
Well, that's why I said, like, how did they get their hair like that? Okay. Like, they were cutting loose on each other's hair.
You must have said it too quiet. Yeah. Must have been your fault, not mine.
That's why I wanted to explain the cutting loose, because that's not like a term you'd necessarily understand.
Right.
If you weren't familiar with the Elvis lore, because I think most normal people wouldn't refer to that particular act
cutting loose
as cutting loose.
I know. Who says that?
Apparently, Mabus was only 8 years old when all this Kazon stuff started, but we have no idea how old he is. I mean, he looks like he's like
50 or something.
But like, he could be 700. We don't know.
Right, yeah.
We don't know.
I know.
He could be 55. He could be 55 million.
He's not exactly 100% honest.
Dan did the order of magnitude gag.
Yeah, I'm glad Patrick caught it.
Yeah, but you did like... You jumped like six orders of magnitude.
Well, that's because at one time Malcolm Reed did like, you know, 12 kilometers, more like 12 light years, or he did something like that was really ridiculous. Right. Might as well be 12 light years. Yeah. Tirsa. This Tirsa guy.
Which one was the Tirsa guy?
He's the one in the bar who was doing the puzzle.
Ah, yes, Tirsa.
And he was like, if I solve this, I get to sleep with the half-naked dancing lady. And Neelix is like...
Oh, a splendid motivation, to be sure.
Neelix played the role of that, like... That like blowhard in the bar that you only put up with because like either he has something you want or like you might get hurt if you fuck with him. But like he thinks that everyone's his friend, but really everyone just fucking hates him.
It's the drug guy, like depending, it's like the cocaine guy or whatever, where you're like, that's okay, that's the guy who he's an asshole, but like people are like, he's allowed here because he's providing some sort of sinister service.
Right. So they sort of they take Neelix away and throw him in jail. Mm. And the only explanation we're given is that like they're just taking away all people who aren't Kazon. Yeah. And it's not really clear why he's in the bar and then they just haul him off. That whole taking him to jail thing, I think was, I understand they said it's because they're rounding up non-Kazons, but they didn't really explain why. Yeah.
And it didn't seem like they were rounding up non-Kazon necessarily, because I think there were non-Kazon in the bar. You could have been smart enough to read the script and not put extras dressed up as other aliens in
the
bar.
It was confusing. But so he was with Tirsa, and Tirsa was like all looking like, fuck this guy, right? And then like the guards come up and Tirsa's like, I don't know this fucker. Yeah. Now, I guess
he spoke tersely. That it was a gag.
Pun
name. Tirsa. Right. He speaks in short.
All this talk about Kazons makes me want to eat some raisins.
Really?
Raisins.
So like Tirsa like said, like, I don't know this guy. Now maybe Tirsa just said that because he thought that he would get in trouble if he had an association with Neelix. But it was Tursa who was helping organize the conference later. You remember that guy who was all like...
A triangle.
That guy?
Yeah.
A triangle.
He still owed Neelix favors?
Yeah, it's like, I didn't understand, because, like, wouldn't Neelix be pissed because, like, Tursa was didn't stand up for him?
Actually,
but
you,
then later on, they're, like, they're working together.
You've actually helped fix this for me. Thank you. Let me
You're welcome.
Let me go through my thinking, and let me see, because it may be...
I finally decided on a triangle, a triangle, a triangle, a triangle.
A massacre?!
I like how I started that sentence with, let me go through this. And you're like, no.
I still had some more sounds to play before you started, because I knew you'd be talking for a while.
You fixed a thing for me that I was confused about. I think you may have
fixed it.
Because
confused.
Watching this initially, I was, when that went down, he's talking to Tursa, and then those
Tursa Minor?
Yeah, these people show up and drag him away. At first, I thought Tursa was in on it with the guards, as in maybe he secretly told somebody or gave a signal to be like, you can pick up this guy, in which case
I was confused too.
Later, but now as you've described it, I realize, no, I think it is kind of what you were saying, that was just random that they showed up and grabbed Neelix, and Tursa was like, I'm not getting like I don't care if I owe you favors. Like, I'm not going to jail with you. I don't know. So he did the whole default. I'm not involved. If you're picking up this guy, you go right ahead. Well, I'm not going to stop you. And now that makes the plot make more sense that he would then be helping.
It wasn't until the second time I started thinking that. Cause at first I was totally confused. I kind of was thinking oh, did he call the guards or why did I wasn't understanding why, he was being taken away and stuff. So yeah, that's what I settled on later, is that maybe he just didn't want to be associated with him because he was afraid he'd get in trouble
but
something.
Still, again, the way the plot is structured and presented is confusing.
I don't get it.
You don't get it.
Sabotage. Evidence.
Peace.
I did.
Captain Janeway.
Briefly, and I don't want to make too much of this. I just, I don't know, it's something that sort of jumped out at me. During the scene where Janeway, at the funeral, where Hogan goes up to Janeway and is complaining to her. And by the way, you were saying that she said speak freely, but then she was rude to him.
Yeah.
That's still like, she didn't like demote him or punish him.
No,
like,
but she was still kind of like.
I think speak freely she gets to speak freely too.
I think it was a trap.
Okay. Well, I'm not going to, 100% disagree with that. But Hogan was talking with her. And then at one point it looked like Hogan was going to get even a little bit more argumentative.
He interrupted her.
And then his friend in the back put his hand on his shoulder.
Right.
For a little bit to kind of comfort and constrain him. And of course, then we later learn that this fellow is shady and willing to, do some mutiny kind of stuff behind the scenes because he reaches out to the Kazon. I don't want to make the wrong assumption here. I never thought this before, but it just sort of jumped out at me. The way that was filmed almost seemed like they were coding them, Hogan and that guy, as having a relationship. It looked to me like the way a spouse or partner would be kind of calming their partner who is arguing with, the boss at Lord & Taylor or Home Depot or Build-Em-Ups or whatever you got in your country.
You may be right.
But what also what I was thinking is that it was a trick they were playing on us, because Hogan was the outspoken one. Mm. So you're like, this is the troublemaker right here. And they had Jonas in the background.
It was like, it sounds like Judas.
And so when you finally see Jonas saying like, let's just say I have some strong stuff with communication or whatever Jonas says.
And good work on the actor. I'm sorry that it's just the way your face looks, but you really do a good job of being a sniveling piece of shit.
Oh, thanks, I think.
Yeah, he really does it. I think I've seen that fella, that actor, in other things being a sniveling piece of shit in the 90s.
Let's just say I'm very familiar with communications protocols.
Even listening to him.
He's listening to that line. What the fuck does that line mean? Communication protocol.
Yeah, it's like, are you a communications officer? We don't know anything about you.
He said it let's just say I know my way around dick.
It says,
I know how to lick some fucking balls, what I mean.
He said it as if we were supposed to know anything about his character. But so when he says,
let's just say I'm very familiar with communications protocols.
He sounds snivelly, but his face when he does it looks even more snivelly. Yeah. But I think it was like a trick by the writers or whatever, or the director or whatever, because like I said, Hogan is played out to be like the troublemaker, and they just show Jonas in the background, and we're not supposed to think anything of it. It's like, oh, that's just some extra or some back character we don't need to care about. Yeah. So when it's Jonas that is the betrayer, we're like, wait, it was that guy all along? Yeah. I think that's why they made him in the back, why they made him next near Hogan all that time.
And honestly, at first I was like, oh, is this like kind of a subtle gay coding? And then I was like, I hope not, because then it's like the gay gentlemen are the sinister, sneaky monsters. And we certainly wouldn't want them to be trying to send that message. So
agreed.
Anyway, just a little weird,
A little weird.
I know.
It's just so weird.
Oh my god.
It's so weird. It's so weird. Janeway challenge.
Yeah. What else do you want to? What else is there to talk about? Is there much else to talk about?
Janeway. Oh, when Chakotay's all like. When Chakotay goes, hey, Janeway, we should do things like the Maquis. And then they later go, we should talk to Seska. And he goes, I don't know about that. And then she goes all like, oh, well, you want to play in the dirt, but you don't want to get dirty.
Yeah.
You might get dirty.
You know, she's all chiding him. Is that chiding? I would say that's chiding.
I think so.
She's admonishing him in this sort of spin it around on you way. There's a bit of chivalry.
All right.
Chivalry.
All right. Let's be very careful, Dan.
Chid?
Yes.
Chid.
Yeah. Okay.
Chid.
Yes.
Chid.
Chide.
I'm sorry.
Chittle.
Okay.
Did something sound off about that?
No. It's Chidler. Just, I get nervous around white people and made up words. Like any sort of like multi-syllable white people made up words. 99% of the time, it's fine.
He's a bit chidlish.
It's late. It's towards the end of the podcast. I get a little nervous.
A little nervous. So, anyways, but you could tell there was some bitterness in that tone. She's like, you might get dirty. Yeah. Like, fuck it. She was like, fuck you from earlier.
Yeah.
Fuck you, Chakotay. Putting the shit on me, and now you're trying to be all squeamish about it. It's like, you want to play the game? Put on the gear, buddy. Mm. That's what she was saying. You want to play the game? Put on the gear.
Yeah.
Nobody's ever said that. I just coined that. You want to play the game? Put on the gear.
Well, let's see if it shows up in a fucking Google Gemini. Or hey, well, how about call it.
That's a dollar, not a dish. Remember that one?
Yeah. The thing is I can never, because in my mind, I always remember it as that's a dollar, not a donut.
No, there's no donuts.
Which doesn't make any sense.
No, it's because you're thinking dollars to donuts.
Yeah, exactly. I know why I'm making the error.
For anyone who doesn't.
It's a cognitive error that I understand why I'm making it, but I don't always know how to correct it.
For anyone who doesn't know, that's a dollar, not a dish. It refers to when you are at the cashier register, and they give you paper money and metal money, coins and dollars, and they don't give you the coins and dollars separately. They like fold the dollar up in that weird tray, and they put the coins on the dollar,
now I remember.
and then they hand you that whole.
That's
like,
a dance can't stand.
Yeah, they hand you that whole unbalanced mess. So when it lands on your hand, like the coins go like flying across the room through some kid's eye, and it's just fucking
like,
horrible.
It's like one of those commercials where like all the worst stuff happens because you haven't purchased the product from the commercial.
So yeah, you don't put the dollar. That's that dollar. Dollar is not a dish for coins. You put the coins in first, then you put the dollars in.
All right.
That's what you do.
That also signals to me that we have nothing more to say about this particular episode. There are probably some spare sound effects. Dan might have a duty or no duty. There might be a that's an order. There might be a this, that, or the other thing. I forgot. We don't have where the hell have I heard that before this week, because I had problems encoding audio, so some audio codec issues.
There was a Kullo was made to look stupid twice. First, it was the meeting with the negotiations where Seska was like, he was saying like, we got to put our soldiers on your shit, and you put our officers on your shit, and you put your officers on our shit, and Seska was straight up going like, we don't need to do all that. You're pushing it too hard. And he's like, quiet, you. And she's like, yes, Maj. First of all, I don't know why she was like,
Maj.
Why she was so assertive at first, and then she immediately backed down. Because especially later on, she gave us like that sort of pointless exposition about how she has his child. Does that come up later?
It's not pointless exposition. It's annoying exposition, because it's only used, that information is not necessary for the plot of this episode other than to have us understand why Maj color isn't just killing her. So
it feels pointless.
Yeah, well, it's the classic.
It feels like they didn't have to introduce that whole idea to begin with.
It's the look, we see this all the time in the TV shows where somebody is like, hold on a second, I gotta make a phone call. Boop, boop, boop. Hey, Rob, this is your brother, Dan. You know that whole recipe thing?
What do you mean?
We both look like jackasses.
What do you mean you lost it out in the woods? I don't know if I can come to your house and give you money so you can look for it.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, yes, you've sort of made up some potential beginning of a plot.
But anyway, so
the case of the missing tapestry recipe.
So she like, yeah, I don't know. To me, it felt pointless, but we can pick hairs about that if we need to, but I don't think we need to
pick hairs.
But, and then Janeway was like, we're not going to do that. Seska was like, you shouldn't do that. And then he basically looked at Tuvok. He's like, make these women chill out. And yeah. Tuvok's like, uh-uh. And so he fucked up that whole meeting and was made like, look like a jackass. Yeah. Later on, she all calls back to us. She's like, you fucking asshole, it's your fault that all this bullshit's going on right now. But then the second way he was made to look stupid was because when we go back to Seska and Kola, and Kola's, and they're talking about going to the conference, yeah. He's all like, I don't want to do this stupid meeting, it's stupid. Yeah. And Seska's like, you idiot, you won't actually do anything useful at the meeting. This is just like a good, this is just to like keep up with information. Yeah. It's a good way to stay in contact with Jonas, our informant.
She's basically like, don't you know how this shit works?
Yeah, right.
Jackass, what the fuck?
Right, and he's like, oh yeah, you know, you're right. And then she pulls, and then he, because he's like, well, I'm not going to come to this meeting and be dragged and be called to them like a Kalogan dog, yeah. Or just a dog. Yeah. I don't know why it's a Kalogan dog, at least with Klingons, they're targs. They're not targ dogs. Yeah. But anyway, so he's like, I'm not going to be called like a Kalogan dog. And she's like, no, we just, you stupid idiot, we're just going to like, you know, learn stuff.
And reticulan
this, that, and the other.
Wombat.
And he's like skeptical, but the way she calls him like a Kalogan dog, and she says, she pulls the whole like, you'll be a hero, people will think you're smart and great if you do this. And he's like, you know what, they will. So he's all bitching about like, they're not gonna like fool me and lure me in like some asshole. And that's exactly what she does to him by telling him that he's gonna be a hero if he does that.
Well, Seska is
twice stupid.
Seska's an interesting character because she is really smart and clever. It's just like, you almost are rooting for her frequently.
Yeah.
she's always ends up like, her plans are foiled by jackasses. It's like a Scooby-Doo type plot.
Scooby-Dooby-Doo.
We have to end the podcast. So what final things? Are there any duty or no duties?
There's no duty or no duties.
All right. Are there any that's in orders?
That's an order. No, that's an order.
Is there anything else anyone would like to say? Jesse, I think you have you said your piece on this episode, Jesse?
Yes.
Was the ship that started blasting into the place at the end, was that a Trabe ship? Was it a mercenary Tok'rid ship? Or was it like a Trabe ship that was stolen by the Saison?
No.
And confiscated back by the Trabe? Like, what ship was that?
Oh, no. The Trabe were shooting the Kazon. They were trying to kill all the heads
that was
of the Kazon.
That was a Trabe. So that was the same ship where there were like 15 that they called an armada.
Yeah.
When
it's the old mafia plot. But, you call the meeting and then kill everybody.
Right. Well, I know what the fuck. I know what it was.
Yeah, I know.
I'm just saying,
I wasn't suggesting you personally.
Why did you bring that up?
I don't know.
But was it
the podcast?
Was it the same? I think it was the same ship that earlier in the episode when they were talking about it's an armada and they were in space.
It's one of them.
It was like when there was like 15, 20 ships on the
screen. Well, that was a new piece of information introduced in this episode, again, to create false drama, because before the commercial break, it's like, oh my God, look at all those Kazon ships. Those look like the Kazon ships. We've seen this whole, up till now, that's the Kazon ships. And then a commercial comes back, it's like, oh no, it turns out the whole time Kazon were like stealing these ships. So these ships, they look the same, but these are actually the other people, but the Kazon, they also steal these ships. So that's the deal.
I just sort of reiterate that I think one of the coolest things this episode did was that it sort of began with like, we don't need to know why this battle is happening. All we need to know is that the Kazon are the bad people. You know, they're the bad people. We got to get them. But then halfway through the episode, you learn that there's a whole history of why things turn out the way they are. And the Kazon aren't just like some like one dimensional, like we're just bad because we're bad. Like they're not even arguably bad. They're just, it's just shit's happened and shit got fucked up.
And the main Kazon we dealt with is a jackass. This color guy is the main one we've dealt with. So maybe the other ones, most of the other ones actually kind of, they seem more reasonable than
yeah.
color.
Yeah, and so it was like the trabe was like a problem, you know, with it. And they brought up interesting things like, oh, well, they were able to keep it on the down low because, like, you know, they have money and they could suppress it. Mm-hmm. Plus, people didn't want to lose their trade routes and shit like
that.
So,
was, you know, that was analogies to real world.
Yeah, I know. I'm just saying, but I'm just saying world. It's
good old classic stuff.
Yeah, no, I'm just nice. Saying. I think it's interesting that they included stuff like
you
that.
You don't need to be defensive.
I'm not being defensive. Yeah. I'm being defensive now because you're accusing me of something I'm not being. No, I was not being defensive. You're trying to push buttons is what you're doing. You're doing the I'm Patrick and I'm going to push Dan's buttons.
I'm trying to push buttons.
But you are pushing buttons.
I take pictures of the board so I know where the buttons are because I don't want to push the wrong
You are pushing buttons and you're doing it on purpose.
All these problems. I don't want to do that.
You're doing things. You're doing many things.
And I hope our audience does.
Is that clear?
Does many
things. No. No. No.
Over the next week until our next episode.
Have you heard anything more about the matter we discussed?
Speaking of
which. I couldn't. I can assure you that I would never agree to that.
Speaking of which, that episode, the episode we will be discussing next week, is Star Trek Enterprise's Fusion.
I'm carrying your child.
It's like a fusion.
This has been an interesting podcast.
I look forward to
it. We learned, Dan and I learned that B'Elanna's on it is actually Seska. We didn't know that.
B'Elanna's on it.
I thought it was B'Elanna the whole time.
Sounds just like her.
B'Elanna's on it.
I bet
Jesse,
even stated
you know what Jesse
before.
Did? He curried us.
He curried us in the colloquial 1990s Washington. No, that's not just Washington D.C. That's over. That's more national. Being curried, Washington D.C.
The first time I met him was in a mining community on Tapas Prime.
Doesn't it sound like he's saying Tapas Prime?
Yeah.
The first time I met him was in a mining community on Tapas Prime.
Where they have like little meals there,
like in octopus their, and like little cucumbers.
But it's Telfas. Telfas Prime.
What if he was talking about Bama Prime?
Bama.
Right. That's 1990s Washington D.C. slang.
Yeah. Where would I stay?
I'm calling people Bamas.
Bamas.
All right.
It's the best part.
All right.
Or Bobo.
Watch Fusion.
Something is Bobo.
Watch Fusion.
Yeah, it's Bobo.
We'll be talking at you Bamas all again next week. Goodbye.
I'm not grateful. And I want you off my ship. Janeway to Paris. Get us out of here.
Is that a baby?
Tursa, my friend! Could be dangerous sneaking up on a man like that.
I'd never dream of sneaking up on you, but you were so engrossed in whatever it is you're doing.
A puzzle. What brings you here, Talaxian?
I'm good at puzzles. Perhaps I could help.
The dancer showed it to me. By moving only two rods, this dodecahedron could become an icosahedron.
Hmm.
She said she'd spend the night with a man who could solve it.
Oh, a splendid motivation, to be sure.